Good afternoon, members. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. My apologies for the late start, but our representative Greiling and I were just working out the final conference report on the Education Finance Omnibus Bill. We'll try to get that out by 3 o'clock today. I was kidding. That wasn't for real. Nervously looking at each other. Representative Greiling moves approval of the March 10th minutes. Is there any corrections, changes, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The motion is adopted. The minutes are approved. Members, we have two items on the agenda for today. We're going to take up House File 669, Representative Loon, and I believe that we still have that, even though that bill is in the possession of the committee, we did market, we did advertise it to be an informational hearing, so there'll be no formal motion on that. And Representative Loon, you have a testifier who needs to leave relatively shortly. Do you want to have them testify first, or do you wish to go first?
I'll just introduce them, if you will, and then he can go first.
Okay. Why don't you head up front? Then is Representative Fritz here already or no? Not yet. Okay. We'll try to give her like the 2-minute warning before we get started. So she. Welcome to the committee, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Yes, today is an informational hearing, so we won't actually be doing any amending on that to House File 669. But there's been, I think, a fair amount of discussion started amongst people on education committees and other on this proposal. And so I just thought it would be a great opportunity for the committee to hear it. There is available for the committee a research summary and an author's amendment of changes that I've been working on to date. I will say more extensive changes are continuing to be made on this bill as introduced, so that also is part of the reason for it being informational, plus the fact that we just got it referred to the committee to be heard yesterday. So with that, I do have a number of testifiers today, and I'm very pleased to first introduce Ted Stark. He is a board member for the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, before I get in the right frame to listen to your testifiers, yes, and so forth, are we, even though we can't amend because we are in, you don't have it here, are you working off today this bill or the amendment?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Greiling. It would be the intention to work off the current delete all authors amendment as presented. Thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you.
Representative Loon.
All right. So with that, because of our time situation, I don't want to short Mr. Stark on his testimony, but again, as a member of the MELF board who really kind of started this project as a private sector initiative, and over a period of about 5 years at looking at early childhood programs, how we could perhaps do things differently, working under a scholarship type program and devising a way to assess quality in those programs and kind of seeing how a quality program impacts children in those programs, and specifically looking at school readiness as sort of just the baseline of what we're talking about today. So with that, Mr. Stark.
Thank Welcome you. To the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Ted Stark. Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to start by thanking you for allowing me to testify today. Like I said, my name is Ted Stark, and I am here speaking to you as a member of the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation Board of Directors. I've been on the board of MELF for a little over a year now. some of you might know MELF is scheduled to sunset as a organization in 2012. When I joined the board, I kind of figured I'd be in for a sunset cruise. But it hasn't been that. It's been a working boat, and we do have a great staff led by Dwayne Benson, and our board is very passionate about the work that we do. If I could, I'd like to start by giving you a little background on how I became involved with MELF. It started out as an original funder of MELF. I am also on the board of the McKnight Foundation, and several years back, the late Nancy Latimer, who was a program officer at McKnight, brought a proposal to the McKnight board to give basically seed money for MELF to get MELF started. We approved that grant, and we have been a funding partner of MELF. McKnight's been a funding partner of MELF ever since. I think it's important to note that MELF is a business-led, business-driven organization that has a business agenda. Our board is comprised of leaders from companies like Cargill, Best Buy, Taylor Corporation, General Mills, just to name a few. When you speak to Minnesota business leaders about education, you hear the same message over and over again, which is we're not doing an adequate job of educating our children for Minnesota jobs, for the Minnesota jobs of tomorrow, and really for the Minnesota jobs of today. I believe this is, personally believe this is unacceptable from a moral standpoint. But there's also a deep-rooted economic issue here that will come to bear in Minnesota shortly. This is why, along with MELP, the Minnesota Chamber, the Business Partnership, and many others strongly endorse Representative Loon's bill. I know that others will walk through the details of House File 669, but I would like to take a minute just to talk to you about the centerpiece of the recommendation, which is the Parent Aware Rating System. Before I do that, I'd like to remind all of you of a few facts. 50% of our children entering kindergarten are not prepared. It's not a coincidence that we have such a low graduation rate, high school graduation rate in this state, because once a child falls behind, it is very difficult and very expensive for them to get caught up. Parent Aware is like a Consumer Reports rating for early childhood education centers. It rates school readiness. It gives parents an easy-to-use and much-needed tool to help them decide where to send their children to go to preschool. It also acts as an incentive for and incentivizes child care centers to become early learning centers. We at MELF believe this is the kind of reform that will be good for Minnesota. And we also believe this is the kind of reform that Minnesota parents want. Again, I would like to thank you very much for letting me speak to you today. My MELF colleagues would be happy to answer any of your questions, any and all of your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And generally what we'll do is we'll take testimony from everybody and then we'll open it up for questions from members. However, my understanding is you're leaving at 1 o'clock. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is.
So are you okay with taking questions for the next 15 minutes in case members have any?
Or? Sure.
Okay.
Depends what the questions are.
Now that's a good answer. That's a good answer. First of all, do any the members of the committee have any questions? Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your testimony. I was actually wondering, what, in terms of not prepared for kindergarten, what does that mean, and how do you measure that? What are the metrics to that? How do we arrive at, a child is not ready for or not prepared for kindergarten? Does it have to do with any certain skill in mathematics or reading, or does it have to do with other things?
Mr. Stark.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I thought I was going to get easy questions.
No. Didn't get the memo, huh?
There are some. There are others that could answer that better, but it's really comes down to being prepared to learn, and I know that's probably not the answer that you want, but I think others can give you some more specifics on that.
And we can, again, we'll have everybody go ahead and testify. I just wanted to make sure if members had a specific question for you regarding your testimony that they were available and had that opportunity. Were there any, Representative Bills, did you have a follow-up from
Mr. Chair? Sure, no.
Okay. Any other members? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you may defer this to other of your testifiers
okay,
if you choose. you said such a low graduation rate, and I'd like to know exactly what you mean by that and what you're comparing it to, because generally Minnesota is considered to have a pretty respectable graduation rate, comparatively speaking. So
maybe comparatively speaking, but I believe we have about a 60% graduation rate, and say we should do better.
Representative Reinhart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just see exactly what data you're looking at, because there's about three or four ways of reporting our graduation data, and I would suggest that it's higher than what you're quoting, but we can discuss that, and maybe others would help.
Sure, Representative,
that.
I might be thinking of
Mr. Stark.
Thank you.
And Representative Reinhart, you're right. There's, I think, three or four mechanisms for ways to calculate a graduation rate, whether they graduate on time in 4 years, whether they
ever graduate, how you track students who leave and you're not able to account for. So I understand. Any other questions for members of the committee? Mr. Stark, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it, and I appreciate you coming down.
Thank you very much.
So, Representative Loon, if you want to continue with the presentation of your bill and or having testifiers come down.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a number of other testifiers, and I think probably next would be best to hear from Dwayne Benson, who is Executive Director of Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, MELF, if we can just use the acronym. I think it would be a little easier today. Erica Moss, who is also works for MELF, who could respond to some questions. And I also have a parent aware family child care provider, Ms. Lisa Thompson, who would testify. We kind of launched into the middle of this without a lot of setup, so if you would permit me just to kind of go back and discuss, and perhaps we could, if people wanted to, kind of go through more of the details. But just to lay a little more groundwork, and Mr. Benson will talk about the specifics of how MELF ran their pilot program and what they found, and may be able to address some of the questions that have been already raised. But just to describe for the committee my involvement with this legislation and what I feel is important to take away from the discussion today. And this was alluded to already about perhaps 50% of Minnesota children not being ready. The MELF's pilot program really targeted children at risk and children for which they maybe have some disadvantage coming into the K-12 system. Their family are low income, perhaps English language is not spoken in the home or the primary language. Are there other risk factors to their learning? And we know from service on this committee and that our K-12 system is incredibly burdened with helping children overcome some of those hurdles as they enter the K-12 system. So what exists for them in the early childhood arena can be very powerful and very important in helping build those early literacy skills, language skills, numerical skills as they head into kindergarten. We spend approximately $400 million in taxpayer money in this state on early education and child care for children those ages. And, you know, as a parent, I remember when I was a first-time parent and looking at preschool for my own oldest daughter, it would have been really helpful to have some kind of information system that gave you some idea of quality and what was offered in various preschool programs. And I think that's the basis, or one of the primary bases of the pilot project that MELF did and looking at where we're wanting to go there. Is there some kind of a rating system? A consumer reports is a really great way of stating it. To help parents evaluate what's out there in the marketplace for their children, and so that they can make a choice about where they would like their children to be educated. And secondly, pairing that with sort of funds made available to parents that qualify based on income ratings, and taking that money in scholarship to place their children where they feel they would want them to be, rather than directing the money to various government programs and directing poor families. Here's the program we've created for you where you will go, but to give parents the ultimate choice as to where their children would receive their education. So those are two very important tenets to keep in mind as we discuss the legislation today. So. With that, Mr. Benson, if you want to go first.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Dwayne Benson. I'd like to, first of all, oftentimes you sit around and you listen to these kinds of proposals. We have the experience here of not only proposing but to implement. And we'd like to have you hear from a provider as they have utilized this, actually a four-star provider, Lisa Thompson. And then if you had some questions, I think she has a bit of a time-sensitive schedule, too. So if you would like to go first, I would appreciate that.
Hi, welcome to the committee. Put your name for the record so that 100 years from now, we know who you are.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Thompson, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am a family child care provider, excuse me, and an early childhood educator right here in St. Paul. I've been serving families and educating young children at the Thompson Family Child Care since 94 actually. I am here today because I have frontline experience with the Parent Aware program. and in as being one of the pilot areas, so I can share my personal experience in with working with the program. When I first heard about Parent Aware and many other providers that I work with, we had a number of reservations. We were worried first because it might be too center-focused. It's much easier to regulate and evaluate a large setting, and it doesn't necessarily give you the same insight using the same standards on a smaller setting. We also worried that family child care would be compared to how a child care center operates in general. We wondered if the standards and program expectations would be sensible and reasonable for family child care providers. I wondered if the program would be flexible enough to accurately portray what specifically makes family child care a high quality care environment that families, thousands of families all across the state are choosing. I have in previous years testified about these very important and very precious differences between a family child care setting and a center setting or a school setting. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about that or refer later about that. But today I want to talk about the process that I actually went through. After going through the process, I can tell you that I'm very glad that I did volunteer to participate with the Parent Aware pilot. Now, I'm not new to the profession of education. I have a bachelor's degree in education, and I've been working to educate young children for over 25 years. But learning and improving skills throughout life is a value that most educators hold very dear. And working with the professional coaches through the Parent Aware program was vital in helping me to do that. Many of the changes I made to my program as a result of my involvement with Parent Aware are things that either never occurred to me or that I just didn't have the necessary supports to follow through with. For instance, the program Parent Aware encouraged me to talk formally to parents about my curriculum and the philosophy behind that. It was easy enough to do. Certainly it was an easy step, and it was incredibly received by the parents in my program. It strengthened my partnership with parents, and that, of course, had a positive effect on the children's learning. It has put the children's learning on the headline between the conversations I have with parents. I also had the opportunity to improve on some of the things that I already had been doing, although informally. For instance, I've always had a positive, ongoing, open rapport with parents about their children's time with me and their children's development. But through the Parent Aware rating process, I was encouraged to take this practice to the next step and complete formal assessments and meet regularly with parents to talk about those assessments. Well, this approach helped show the parents what I do, and it also helped show how their children were progressing in their development with someone who had an intimate, ongoing relationship with their child, not a one-time meeting with a physician or something later on when they're five and it's already past those first five years. It helped to show their parents when children needed more help at home, and it opened up an excellent forum for me to discuss specific strategies with the parents on how they could support their child's learning and work in partnership with what's happening during their daytime. It strengthened that partnership between the parents and myself, and it helped ensure that we were on the same page in supporting each other in our respective roles. The Parent Aware coach that I worked with, she was wonderful. She was there to support the program improvements that were important to my program, not making my program something that was in a book. Very specific to what was happening in my home and the things that parents specifically chose my program for. It helped me to support those things that may not be in the books. It was undoubtedly hard work, without question, and it was a huge commitment. But I'm very proud to tell you that, like you mentioned, I've been able to maintain my 4-star rating for several years now and running. And I've now started the process of having my program accredited through the National Association for Family Child Care. The ratings help show parents that I'm doing all I can to support their children's learning. It feels very good to have the professional recognition for something that I care so much about that I've been doing for 20 years. And being able to demonstrate that to others, it has really been important, not only for myself, for my connection with parents, but also for the community in general and seeing what's happening with young children. And not all people come into the business with a background in education, but are fantastic at caregiving and would give anything to improve their skills in what they're doing with children and connecting that to what children are expected to know once they start in kindergarten. We certainly take classes ongoing to keep our license, but this partnership in working with developing children's needs and academic abilities before they start kindergarten is really vital. Now, my understanding is that this bill calls for giving care providers in all parts of Minnesota the option of having parent-aware coaches, resources, and ratings. That's really wonderful news. I know a lot of providers around the state are apprehensive because they don't understand exactly what the program is. And the most vital part about this rating program is that it never be disconnected from the improvement support, because it only becomes punitive and, in my opinion, very ineffective if we take away what the priority is, and that is improving the quality of experiences for young children. I believe the Parent Aware program can be one of the best things that ever happened to family child care in Minnesota. I have certainly, over the past several years of working with the pilot program, found the people that were working to develop the program very open to hearing the differences between family child care and center care in school settings, and how those differences really need to be supported and recognized in the process of rating. And I hope that that would certainly continue as the program goes across the state, because there are differences also between family providers in the metro area and the rural areas that really need to be addressed. Parents are choosing family child care for specific reasons, and we need to keep focus on what those are and how to connect them with children's learning and having them ready for school. I don't believe that the program should be mandatory. It certainly would be most effective when it's voluntary. I can't speak for everyone, of course, but I could certainly speak for my choice. I'm very happy that the program has been available. I'm very happy with having the opportunity to have participated in the improvements that I've made in my program, and so are the parents. And I hope providers all across the state will have these same opportunities that I have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Thompson. We appreciate it. Are there any questions for members of the committee? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, welcome, and thank you for your testimony. And I really do appreciate having a perspective from a family care provider. And just to give you a little background, I represent the Mankato area, and our area is one of the pilot sites. And some of the issues you're referring to have been pretty prevalent in our area in terms of a level of skepticism, maybe that's a strong word, but from some home providers, in terms of it being a process that wouldn't regiment their care and would, you know, respect the differences between center care and a home provider. And because you have an early childhood background, I see that you would be much more open to the benefits of the rating system. So I'm wondering, from your own experience, if you have something to say, maybe lessons that could be learned about how to approach family care providers about the value of the rating system in a very positive, more carrot way, rather than, you know, providing, kind of creating a barrier of fear that they would lose something in the process.
Ms. Thompson.
Thank you. I believe that the most important first step in reaching providers and bringing them into this mode of thinking would be to validate what they're already doing, and to really bring what they're already doing and how to bring it into more of the formal education for early childhood. Another program that I participated in, Project Early Kindergarten here in St. Paul, brought the PEK program to family child care. And I saw my colleagues in the class is very resistant to some things at first, like lesson plans. But once they brought themselves from where they were forward, rather than just jumping into somebody else's shoes or at a different point, but being able to connect what they're already doing and to the other steps would be vital.
Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you've given some indicators, and I'm guessing that you could probably offer some advice as QRS may be moving forward so that we can address these issues more broadly in outstate Minnesota.
Any other questions for members of the committee? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, what ratio of small home type daycare preschool use the you want a quality rating system compared to the large providers?
Ms. Thompson.
I don't have specific numbers. Just from my personal experience of speaking with providers around the state, people who have been through the program are much more supportive of it once they see what it's all about and realize what it can do for their program. I don't think it would be a fair assessment necessarily to say at this point who supports it and who, the numbers that support it and the numbers that don't, simply because I don't think that the message has gotten through enough.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was reading through the Child Care Works survey that was done and noticed that 45% of Greater Minnesota was surveyed in regard to this. And that I would guess where it says there's apprehension, it's in rural Minnesota, because I know that my providers have grave concerns about a rating system, feeling that even though it's voluntary, it'll become mandatory. And, you know, really in central Minnesota, I think most of my providers want to nurture the children. They want them to grow and develop as children. They want them to learn their numbers and letters. They do not want to teach them to read because that may conflict with what's going to be done in the kindergarten level. They want to be those loving part-time parents because parents are working. And Mr. Chair, I have grave concerns about part of this bill, and that's, you know, the parent aware, the rating system. It sounds to me like it's going down a track that is going to compartmentalize our children in that age group when I think it's so important. And I was a stay-at-home mom, so I know how important it was to be there with my children, and I'm doing the teaching, and though I may have taken them to like a Montessori, our son went to Montessori for a while, for a few hours a day, I was still in charge. And I know that's what the providers in East Central Minnesota want. They don't want to be caught up in this competitive nature with the big providers, who I notice in here, you know, do like this rating system. And so, Mr. Chair, I just have to express that. I think it's great that we might be looking at scholarships. And I'll have a question of Mr. Benson when we get to that. You know, for those who aren't going to be as lucky as some children are to be in a setting that has a loving provider and a nurturing provider and who works with parents. It's a small setting. It might be in the home. I mean, I have some great centers in rural Minnesota, and I know others do too, and I just don't want them to have this kind of overarching government bureaucracy in charge of them when I think they're doing a fabulous job to get children ready for school at the rate that we should get ready, children ready for school. So I'll wait and ask Mr. Benson a question later.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And Representative Greiling, your question was for Mr. Benson as well. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Thompson? Ms. Thompson, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate you taking the time to come down and talk with us.
Thank you.
Representative Loon, who is your who's your next testifier?
Mr. Dwayne Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Dwayne Benson, and Representative Lynn's bill embodies most of the recommendations from the Early Learning Foundation. Before I proceed, I want to point
point out three things that are in your packet. One is the quote sheet, what other people have said about the current system and ours. And then there's a sheet that's two-sided. On the top of it is the current, a diagram of the current system done by the Humphrey Institute. And then below is what we envision. And then on the other side are some things that Erica Moss will talk about. I want to field those questions that were posed earlier, but before I do, I want to make sure that we have a clear understanding of what this does and doesn't. You're going to hear from some people that are going to tell you some things that we believe are myths. And I want to pick them off one at a time, if I might. The first myth is that this return on investment of 16 to 1 is not real. These are not social scientists. These are economists that have figured this out, like Art Rolnick and Hackman and others. And actually, it takes a long time to figure out the return on investment. And the most recent ones will demonstrate, I think, that Art Rolnick is wrong, and it's actually 18 to 1. And those are done by Dr. Reynolds. So that's the first myth that I think needs to be set aside. And then the school readiness measure isn't valid. Again, Dr. Reynolds had found there's a correlation between early education and that preparation and those 50% that are not prepared. That's the crux of the matter here, is the 50% that are not prepared. Let me go on to give you an actual quote. School readiness results significantly and consistently predict third grade MCA reading and math test scores and the need for school remedial services, special education, grade retention, above and beyond the influence of child and family background characteristics. So you're going to hear a lot of studies, and some of it's like the weightlifters in the 1960s who were trying to figure out who had the best steroids. And everybody can bring forward their study. But these are recent, and they're done at our own institutions. Let me give you another one. It said, parent aware encourages kids to be away from their parents. That's simply not the case. 75% of the market right now is in child care. 75% of the parents have their children someplace during the day. And it's because we have the highest percent of women in the workforce of any state in the union. This does not make that any worse or make it any better. This just gives good information. This gives information that makes the market work. If the objective that we collectively agree on is to have more than 50% ready, and you look at that one handout in your sheet from the Humphrey Institute, none of us would have designed that system. That's the system we have. That's the system that designs and delivers 50% readiness. And the last myth I'd like to talk about is that parent aware limits parent choice. Just the opposite. It makes the market work by giving the chance for parents to make educated choices. To the question of the hesitancy of providers, our most skeptical providers, when they came into our pilots, are our strongest advocates because it's voluntary. They don't have to do it. They see the benefit in doing it, both financially and the delivery that they ultimately prepare and present. So the question, I think, for policymakers is fairly clear in my mind. You can continue to do what we've always done and get more of what we got. Or you can go to a system that took us 5 years and we raised $20 million of private money to prove that works. That's embodied in Representative Loon's bill. So ask yourself these questions. Will the parents be more empowered with the passage of this bill? Will there be better rewards for the providers that will drive more quality? Will it lead to more accountability for public investments? Will it lead to more private investments? And will it lead to better kindergarten readiness? And I would, in my own opinion, say yes to all of those questions. So this is a big change, and it's a big change over the status quo.
And we believe, and we've been able to demonstrate, that it's better than the status quo. And I would urge your support for it. And now I will stand for questions.
Thank you. We're going to conclude public testimony, and then we'll allow members to ask questions. Representative Loon, who's your next testifier?
Well, Mr. Chair, this is Erica Moss, and I didn't know if she wanted to testify or just be available to respond to questions.
Mr. Chairman, would it be of interest to you and the committee that Erica Moss walk through the bill?
That would be Representative Loon's decision. Representative Loon, do you want that?
I guess I'd leave that up to the committee. I'm seeing a few heads shake, like no. I think perhaps we'll hear from public testimony, Mr. Chairman, and then go to questions.
Thank you, Representative Loon. This is a. Do you have any other testifiers lined up for yourself, or we?
I do not. There may be a few others who had mentioned they may come to testify, and
this is a public hearing. So those members who wish to testify either for the bill or voice concerns about it, please come forward. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Pritchard. I'm president of the Minnesota Family Council, and I'd like to speak in opposition to the bill. And I just want to first say that I think we all, our goal is to see that we want to help children and we want them to succeed in life. But I'm concerned about the approach that this bill takes, and the direction it's going is the wrong direction. And I think we also ask, is this a wise investment of taxpayer dollars? I think that's very important to look at. The concern, I think, fundamentally, kind of philosophically, is what does the early childhood preschool programs do? They incentivize parents. I mean, the figure is given $400 million. They're incentivizing parents to have a third party or somebody else raise their children or help take care of their children. And I think that's the wrong incentive. I think the best care for a child is parent care. And yet I think the whole system is moving us in the direction we don't want to go. And I think we all know how government incentives, albeit well-intended, can take us in the wrong direction. And I think that's what this is doing. Basically, it's saying if you want to have somebody else take care of your kids, we'll give you resources, we'll give you subsidies. But if you take care of your kids, you're not eligible for any of that. So I think that's from the big picture of our concern. The other concern I have with the preschool, and I'll talk about the bill testing as well, is these programs aren't effective in the long run and oftentimes can do damage to children. There is a massive federal government study out on the Head Start program. 5,000 students, it was kind of the gold standard of tests. They had a control group. And they found that by the first grade, the differences had faded out between those who participated in Head Start and those who didn't. And in fact, by kindergarten, they showed that the test math skills of the kids was lower than those who hadn't participated. And there's countless studies showing this fade-out effect. And yet, we're expected to believe that, hey, we can, if we just put more money into it, more resources, we can do it even better. But I don't think that's going to work. And it was alluded to the fact that we can save $18 if we spend $1. But if you look at a lot of those studies, they're based on programs back in the 1960s, which have not been replicated. And so there's countless examples of that. And then finally, these programs can even be harmful to kids. There's a major study out of Stanford and Berkeley of 14,000 kindergartners, and they found that preschool, I had a quote, it says, we find that, and this is Berkeley and Stanford, we find that attendance in preschool centers, even for short periods of time each week, hinders the rate at which young children develop social skills and display the motivation to engage classroom tests, as reported by their kindergarten teachers. You know, I think the problem is we're not encouraging kids to be raised by their parents, and yet we're pushing them out to have other people raise them, and I think that's a problem. There's also talk about this is going to be like a consumer report. Well, the big difference between consumer reports and this is these ratings are established and put in place by the government. They're not a private entity which is doing them separately, and I think that's a big difference and a concern we have with it. Also, the program is not targeted at the most needy. it talks about children, 47% of medium family income are this is available for us. So this is targeted not at the most needy, but for the middle class and others. And I agree with the notion of vouchers. I think that's an important way to harness the benefits of the market and choice, and that's good. But I think this bill undercuts the use of the market by, in a sense, imposing a rating system on private daycare centers. Now, people say, hey, well, this is voluntary. Nobody has to participate. But it's very interesting. A couple of years ago, I think it was one of the House sponsors of this legislation said that this would clearly pressure private providers to become part of the system or come under the rating system because, one, they would be ineligible for funding, and, secondly, it would stigmatize them for not being a rated provider. So I think it's a misnomer to say that this is completely voluntary when, in fact, I think the effect is it's going to drive groups to be a part of the system. And just quickly, a few things through the bill. Article 1, Section 1, I thought it was interesting. They say parents must choose a rated provider in the participating region. But if they aren't in that region, they can do what's in the best interest of the kids. So, you know, what is it? Is it the best interest of the kids or to be a part of this system? Section 4, it talks about, I think it expands the state bureaucracy, reports and rating and tracking kids. You know, this is a big government approach. It's not a free market approach. It targets middle class families. It's a one size fits all. There's in Section 6 of Article 1, I think it raises data privacy concerns about tracking the names of transferring between departments and agencies. Section 7, it raises the specter of early childhood screening, which is a very controversial area in terms of social-emotional screening. We have concerns about that. And I thought it was very interesting in Article 2, Section 4 and 5, it defines success for aspects of the program as the number of professionals furthering their education. And then secondly, the amount of money brought into the system. So in a sense, they're measuring the inputs. That's success rather than, you know, what are we attempting to achieve, helping these kids. Finally, what should be done? I think we should focus on K-12 education and give parents more options in that area. That's the problem. Kids, you know, they're dropping off when they get into the public, the K-12 system. I think we should eliminate the QRS, reduce the bureaucracy, target the most needy if you want to move ahead with these programs. And I think it's important to realize the best way to eliminate the achievement gap. There's a study out of California saying you can eliminate the achievement gap, educational achievement gap, if there are two factors present in the lives of children. That's they're live in a married household with married parents and a high degree of religious involvement. You know, obviously, you can't force people to marry. You can't force people to have a high degree of religious involvement. But I think what is the state's focus in terms of encouraging and promoting those factors when, in fact, I think bills like this just deal with the symptoms. And, in fact, I think, as we see from so many welfare programs, they provide the wrong incentives. So, in conclusion, I see this as a movement in the wrong direction, more state involvement, more spending, and more government control. It's a big government solution, especially in a time of tight budgets. I think it's the wrong way to go. So, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of Education Liberty Watch, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. We also have grave concerns about the bill and would urge it not being supported. I wanted to speak about the constant statement that 50% of children in Minnesota enter kindergarten not ready to learn. And I hope that you received a packet with some quotes from the Department of Education regarding the kindergarten readiness assessment. And basically, to summarize, it lies in the face of evidence and logic, and we see it as being used to create a false sense of crisis that will result in spending money we do not have and increasing the size and scope of government over our youngest children at a time when we should be cutting government, especially for programs that do not work or have harmful effects. The kindergarten readiness studies done at the Department of Education have stated not only at worst that 2 to 11% of children are not showing any indication of progress on the indicators that they test. That's not 50%, that's 2 to 11%. The department also says that the goal is, quote, not to establish whether or not children are ready for school with the use of a composite ready or not ready score, end quote, and that these types of definitive determinations of readiness can have unintended negative consequences. They also quoted a National Academy of Sciences report that extreme caution should be used in relying on assessment for children birth to five. Former Commissioner Alice Segrin correctly pointed out that if 50% of children were not ready for kindergarten, why do the third grade MCAs show a 70 to 75% proficiency rating in math and reading? It doesn't correlate. So, and in addition, the items on the assessment are highly subjective and open to interpretation. It calls into question whether we should be using this assessment at all, much less expanding its use through Parent Aware and this bill. With regard to the figures bandied about that $1 invested in early childhood yields a whole bunch of money in cost savings, you have to understand that this was based on three small studies that had large parental involvement components, methodological flaws that they weren't replicated, they were very expensive, they're not typical of most early childhood programs, and they cannot easily be brought to scale. All of the quotes describing that were in the packet that I gave you a couple of weeks ago when I testified, and I'd be happy to answer questions about any of those. A scholarly review just published in January of this year said that most of these studies are based on results of a small yet impressive set of outdated studies. More recent literature reveals positive short-term effects of early childhood education programs on children's development that weaken over time. So again, the concept of fade-out that Mr. Pritchard alluded to. I've testified previously in this committee that prominent brain researchers, including Jack Schoenkopf, who is Art Rolnick's favorite person to quote, admit that there is no correlation between basic science brain research and then when or what type of early childhood program, if any, would help kids, that those types of connections are still years, if not decades, away, and that the brain is still developing until the end of adolescence and into adulthood. So it really isn't a crisis. And that interventions after the preschool years can and still do work. All of these quotes are also in the packet that I gave you a couple of weeks ago. I would also disagree with the point that we don't know what we're getting for the $400 million that we spent. There have been hundreds of national studies that are quite clear that any beneficial effects of these programs fade away or there's evidence of academic or emotional harm. The legislative auditor's report states that there is no evidence on the effect of school readiness programs despite the evaluations, which means it doesn't work, that there is small or no effect of ECFE on child development, and as to Head Start, although there have been no studies in Minnesota, the hundreds of national studies, including the one that was just described, show that the program does not work, and in addition, the General Accounting Office found that there is evidence of fraud in these programs. As to Parent Aware and this specific bill, both MELF and the national studies quoted in the other handout on the evidence of effectiveness of quality rating systems that I hope you have in your packet say that there is no linkage, there's no evidence yet that quality rating systems improve quality program quality or child outcomes, and that evidence may also be years or decades away. So, and Parent Aware says specifically the design does not permit us to determine if Parent Aware causes outcomes for programs, parents, or children. We look at patterns of association, but causation cannot be determined. So, if that is the case, how can you do what the bill says on lines 3.31 and 3.32, that parent aware must use quality rating systems shown to be linked to improving school children's school readiness outcomes? If you can't answer the question with the quality rating system, then how can you do this? The report also admits that two-thirds of the programs in the pilot are automatically rated as 4 stars, and there are several problems with that. It includes the Head Start programs that have all the problems that we've just mentioned. Only one-third of the programs in the pilot were actually going through the full parent-aware rating system, and that means that small individual providers must compete against large centers or ones or these programs that have a free pass with the automatic 4-star rating. It was also noted in the report that during the pilot, parent-aware implementation team and other providers said that the rules for ratings shifted over time. So you have inconsistent rules on how the quality rating system is done, and that limits the evidence of your findings. The bill sets up a whole new child care bureaucracy without any idea of cost. It requires an RFP done by the Department of Administration, the Department of Education, the Department of Human Services. But again, if these programs admittedly aren't answering the questions that you're asking, how can you even do an RFP, and how much is it going to cost to do that, much less implementing it? Lines 3.14 and 3.16 specifically talk about a data management system, and yes, there are big data privacy concerns with that, and there is also a free data, not a free, but a taxpayer-funded data transfer by the Department of Human Services to whatever organization ends up doing this bigger parent aware on lines 4.14 and 4.16. And then language in lines 8.16, it requires children to be screened without acknowledging Minnesota Statute 121A.17, subdivision 3E allowing conscientious objection, and subdivision 5, which states that districts are required to notify parents that they may opt out of screening altogether. So those are just some of the very large issues that need to be dealt with, and we therefore renew our opposition to this program.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I think this is the first time you've been to the committee this year, isn't it?
Pardon me?
No, that's right. Well, I was gone that day, though. Okay. First time you and I have been able to be in the same committee this year. I was not here the first time you were here.
Right.
So I just
right.
wanted to say hi. Thank you, and Dr. Pritchard, thank you as well. Again, this is a public hearing, so members of the public are invited to please testify. Ms. Efferin and Mr. Pritchard, will you guys be available for questions when we're complete
Absolutely.
With the public? Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Todd Otis. I'm president of Ready for K, an early childhood policy and advocacy group. Thank you for the chance to testify about this bill. I first of all want to indicate that Ready for K and a group of allies have embraced a couple of the key provisions in this bill. And the ultimate thing that we're trying to deliver for kids who are birth to five is access to quality early learning. And the longitudinal studies that have led Art Rolnick to the conclusions he's reached have never been refuted. I won't go into the benefits, but the payoff in terms of educational and job and economic benefits are proven and uncontested. Access to quality early learning really will determine whether kids are ready for kindergarten. And a recent study by Arthur Reynolds at the University of Minnesota has shown that the measurement of school readiness does relate to third grade literacy and other indicators at the third grade level, so that as we assess school readiness based on the observations of kindergarten teachers, those assessments do correlate to how well kids are going to do by the third grade. So it really matters if they're ready for kindergarten. We just wanted to comment on three of the key aspects of this bill, and I will be brief because I know you have other people to listen to as well. One is the quality rating system has strong bipartisan support all over the country and here. It's a parent-driven, parent-empowering mechanism to help them identify quality. Its very existence motivates people in the field to upgrade their quality. It's a terrific idea. It's a very cost-effective one, and it really deserves our support. The expansion of scholarships is a worthy idea because it increases access. Representative Loon is working on different aspects of the bill as to how that will be funded, as I understand it. But we support increased access to quality early learning, including through the scholarship system. And the tax credits as well. The motivation behind the tax credits is to pump more private sector money into this greatly underfunded system. And so we think that that's an important strategy, too. So we really appreciate your willingness, Representative Loon, to push this forward and keep this fall moving forward for school readiness. The Minnesota's Future Alliance is called that because it truly is going to affect our state's prosperity. The competitive edge we've had through the years has been education, as you know. And the way we maintain that and grow that competitive edge is to have our kids be the best educated of all the states in the country. And the foundation, the beginning, the very first 5 years determines the trajectory of that education. So thank you for your time, and I'll be around later for questions, too. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Will you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Nino. I'm the Executive Director of Child Care Works. And we are also a member of the Early Childhood Alliance that Todd Otis mentioned in his testimony, Minnesota's Future. Child Care Works is a statewide child care advocacy organization whose mission is to achieve and sustain high-quality child care options for families and communities in Minnesota. We are testifying today in support of House File 669. Child Care Works has been and remains supportive of a statewide voluntary quality rating and improvement system, and it was one of only three items that we identified on our 2011 policy agenda. Our work with parents and providers over the past 30 years, along with the extensive research that you've heard about by the MELF, the University of Minnesota, and Wilder Research, has shown again and again how important it is that parents receive information about the quality of child care settings in order to choose the most appropriate placement for their child. We also know that child care providers crave and make use of every opportunity to improve services that they provide to children and families. And Lisa Thompson, who is the family provider that testified earlier, I think is one of the shining examples of that and such a great testament to a quality child care provider. She also did a very nice job of describing how she overcame her own fears and concerns about the quality rating system and that Representative Brainard and Representative Erickson both raised. Mm-hmm. And in order to help family child care providers and other child care centers learn more about the parent aware and give them an opportunity to express those concerns and to share the information about what the program really was, Child Care Works, in partnership with the Bipartisan Legislative Early Childhood Caucus last year, conducted listening sessions with child care providers across the state to hear their experiences and concerns regarding the implementation of the quality rating system. The report that Representative Erickson referred to from Child Care Works, I hope you all have a copy of. I did email it to Aaron and Amy. If you didn't get a copy, I'd be happy to provide that. But that's a summary of what child care providers are saying and experiencing with the quality rating system. To summarize it for you, what we have ascertained from these sessions and the research I mentioned before is that a QRS will successfully increase child care quality and improve parent information. However, buy-in from your child care providers in your regions geographically is vital. While parents are certainly key to the use of a QRS, it is critically important that we focus on making sure that child care providers have access to the resources and training that Lisa talked about in her testimony, and that these will help ensure the quality of their care. I like to think of it as a build it and they will come model. This model also ensures that parents have real choices among the quality settings. Child Care Works is committed to the successful implementation of a quality rating system, and we're available as well to answer questions or assist the committee as you move forward on this important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nino. And are there any others to speak in for or who have concerns on the bill? Thank you, sir. Will you please state your name for the record?
My name is Steve Kerr. I'm the Community Education Director for the Neokanapin School District and would be speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Community Ed Association. I think, first of all, we'd want to applaud the spirit of the bill. Clearly, as school districts, children being ready for school would be paramount for us and obviously makes our job easier as school educators. We have some concerns, and I'd want to acknowledge that Representative Loon has expressed a willingness to work with us on those, but felt that we needed to at least highlight those a little bit for you. The bill, as it's currently drafted, would essentially repeal 100% of the school readiness aid that goes to school districts around the state of Minnesota and redirect those to three pilots. Needless to say, that would be a grave concern for those of us in school districts. The other area that we would have some concerns about is it adds mandates for school districts. It would require that school districts would provide 12 hours of classroom instruction on a weekly basis for school readiness programs. I would remind committee members that in the school readiness program that is part of school districts has not received a funding increase since 1991. We are not, as school districts, we are certainly willing and recognize needs in our school districts for more intensity of services for the children who are coming to us with greatest needs. A reference point for you as committee members, when I surveyed the state to see what is happening and what the current delivery model is, you should keep in mind that currently 90% of the school districts are reporting they have a two-day-a-week model, which would be about 6 hours of instruction a week, and 80% of the school districts provide a three-day-a-week option, which would be about up to 9 hours a week. So to go to 12 hours a week has some significant implications in terms of the number of class sections that are available, as well as early childhood special ed is a primary user of those class sections to place children in least restrictive environments. But when we reduce class sections, we're going to reduce places to provide services for those kids, and that is the most cost-effective delivery system for our school districts. And finally, for us, it would appear that it adds an additional process for us. In addition to working with our school boards and with MDE, for committee members, school readiness as a program is required to submit biannual reports to the plans to the Minnesota Department of Education, have approved curriculum, and do assessments with students. In addition to that, the programs currently are using licensed staff and are doing all of this work with, again, as I mentioned, without a funding increase since 91. So I think while we support the spirit of the bill, we would have some concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. And are there any other testifiers? Seeing none, we can open it up for questions. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of things, but before I get to that, having heard the last testifier, Mr. Kerr, I would ask Representative Loon, I didn't look over your amendment carefully, but the reason I asked the question I did at the beginning was I thought you deleted the repeal of the school readiness program in your amendment. Is that correct? And then what is the standing of the required 12 hours in this amendment?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Greiling. The amendment as it currently is
in draft form, does not repeal the school readiness funding or taking of the school readiness funding, but that is my intention. So, again, this is a working draft, and so that would no longer be my intent. So when we get to a finalized author's amendment, that's what you will see. With regards to the 12 hours, that is still something I want to work on. And just to respond to some of the concerns that have been raised by some of the testifiers, one of those concerns that was raised was regards to whether or not certain providers would be given what I'll term as a free pass and be given a rating without being evaluated under Parent Aware. And that is not the direction I would like to go with this bill. Again, I want the Parent Aware rating to be completely voluntary on the part of the provider. But it would be my intention that anyone who wished to have a rating would have to be evaluated, and that would include school-based settings, Head Start, any program that wished to, again, try to attract students with scholarship funds.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grayling.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon. So then you would require the 12 hours to get the quality rating?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Grayling. You know, I'd say I'm still going to take a look at that. My feeling on it right now is that I'm leaning towards keeping it. But again, I know the community ed directors and have made a compelling case. I'm going to continue to look at that. One of the concerns, and I'll allow the MELF people to speak to this as well, is that if we are looking at children who are in an early education system and wanting to show some measurable results of that, their research and studies have shown and strongly recommended that a minimum of 12 hours. And so I think we need to go back and look at whether or not that would be a direction we want to go if we are trying to show results for kindergarten readiness.
Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you. Well, then I will just I have my statements then that I wanted to make. I don't think it's any surprise for most of the people in this room, but just for the record, I have been a supporter of the quality ratings, but I also strongly believe in the access. And so by doing this, if we decrease the number of students served, you know, all in the name of the quality, I think that's at cross purposes. In my own Roseville area schools, the school readiness program is, I think it's 2 days a week. It's certainly not 12 hours anyway. And it is mostly, I visited it more than once, it's mostly the pre-special ed kids who are in it. And they need that. And they have tracked the kids and they do better in school for having had it. But they haven't had a funding increase since 1991. And so to have this a huge unfunded mandate in a year when we're arguing over which mandates to remove, but this would be a new one that would cost money, or else they'd have to eliminate the program, I would strongly think would be the wrong thing to do. So I hope you will continue talking to the community ed people and look at that. And I, whether school readiness makes the quality rating or not, I think if the school districts did not have their funding cut, they would continue to do it anyway because it does benefit kids. But it is a small amount of money for my school district, which is one of the larger ones, not as large as the Nokahennepin or Minneapolis or St. Paul, but it's also subsidized by the school district budget. And if the state funding went away, then I think it would be in peril to be able to be kept. And so I think we need to look at the overall goal, which I think is quality and access. And if we did both, I think we would see our way clear not to cut school readiness either by eliminating it or cutting it. So I'm glad you're going in the right direction and encourage you to continue on, and I'll be watching very carefully when we get the final budget bill to see what happens to school readiness, because I'm worried about it now having seen the original bill. It's, you know, so I'm all the more focused on, it's probably the first thing I look at when we get your bill is what did you do with school readiness. And then my final thing, Mr. Chair, a different Mr. Chair, is the topic of school vouchers, their credits that we call them here in Minnesota. When Florida was here, they called them vouchers. And I don't support those. And I see that as a way to add a lot of government mechanism for something that could be simply done in by having the state government fund school readiness, Head Start, ECFE, and sliding fee child care. We could have scholarships. They could be contributed to by interested parties, businesses, or individuals. But why not contribute them, you know, directly to the schools, and then they could, you know, they could have scholarships based on who applies and who's most needy, and have the criteria. But I'm also a big supporter of government sliding fee, which does that as well. And we're all set up to do that. We know how to do that, but we just don't fund it. So we have huge waiting lists for sliding fee child care. We have waiting lists for school readiness. We have waiting lists for Head Start. And we even have waiting lists now with the state of how we haven't funded early childhood with ECFE in some places. So those are my my comments about this. And I always appreciate, it's great to see all the early childhood people here. We don't have that committee anymore. We don't see them very often in the audience. And this is a great day just because of that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Representative Loon, did you wish to comment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, just briefly. And I thank Representative Greiling for her comments on that, and I take those very much to heart. And again, all I can say to her, you and the committee, is that it is not my intention to raid the school readiness funds to enter into this. I'm trying to find a way to not remove the current services that we're providing to children, but looking at how we could take the MELF pilot and expand upon that and measure the results and see what we're getting and through this concept. And again, I think, you know, certainly the school readiness programs could certainly be providers if my concept moves forward for children with scholarship dollars, if that's where the parents who receive the scholarship dollars choose that they would want their children to go. So it could certainly provide perhaps more avenues for them to help more children.
Follow-up, Representative Greiling?
I'm good.
Thank you. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, I know that you and I represent different parts of the state, so we probably have different concerns, and I certainly respect your bringing this forth. But, you know, I will continue to have concerns about the parent aware, as I commented on earlier, and about how discriminatory Article 1 seems to be in regard to the fact that scholarships will not be available right away to those parents who may use a daycare or preschool setting that does not have this rating system, and that bothers me greatly. And moreover, this is growing government. This is a huge mandate. But my question is for Mr. Benson, if that's okay.
Come on down, Mr. Benson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Benson, you and I met with Senator Olson before session began, and I had a different concept of what you were going to be doing with this. So it seems to me it has expanded and changed since our first conversation. But if MELF is in, MELF put together Section 6 on the Delete Everything Amendment, why is it that MELF, which I was a part of the origination of with Representative Sikora and Representative Segrin, why is it that MELF cannot do this as a private sector foundation, Mr. Benson, and leave and I'm talking about scholarships now, and leave out this attachment to growing government, or maybe it's not an attachment, it is growing government. Why can't MELF continue to do this, as I thought was the intent when we originally founded the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, that you were going to be a conduit for parents
who probably don't have the same skills that I had as a parent and the same knowledge, so can make decisions. But those parents who might not have the income and might not have, you know, the skills to work with their children, I thought that we were going to offer scholarships to those parents so that they could get a leg up to help their children be more prepared for kindergarten in a nurturing way and in, you know, teaching numbers and letters and just those initial things that all of us parents love to teach our children and love to read to them. What happened along the way that this changed?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson. Let me give you a little history, and then maybe all of us can understand it better. You are correct. The legislature was instrumental in the forming of the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, and that was in 2005 session, I believe. Yes. At that time, you also appropriated $1 million and gave it to us. And the starting entities that were interested, Mr. Stark from McKnight, United Way, Metropolitan, and Cargill. We had 14 board members, and you've heard our board members, CEOs of various companies throughout the state tend to be the large ones, the General Mills and Cargills, et cetera. Our first meeting, we gave the $1 million back.
Yes.
And we took it private. And then we raised $20 million private. And we did that for, as one of our board members said, so we could become the honest broker. If you recall the legislation, there were specific things that had to happen. Certain people had to be appointed to this board for this public-private partnership. There was all sorts of state laws that came into play. And so that was a conscious decision. As someone that was involved in raising the money, I wasn't terribly happy initially. But in the long term, it turned out to be a very good decision because we have become the honest broker. And our mission was a simple one, to find the most cost-effective ways to prepare children for kindergarten. And when we say children, we say high reward. Because if you do high quality and it's targeted, and there's been some discussion about whether it's targeted, and our largest pilot, 38% of the mothers did not speak English, did not graduate from high school. 50% of the kids, English is not spoken in the home. 60% have never seen a computer. That's targeted. And we found that the model that we're recommending you works. It works for the student. It works for the parents. We found, contrary to the general population, almost no mobility. When these kids are successful, the parents are anchored. And so we have done that. The provision that you're citing is an attempt to encourage more investment from the private sector. Tato has talked just a little bit about that, so that we would continue that investment from the private sector. And I'm from Lanesboro, Minnesota, small town as well, and there are businesses not in Lanesboro but in surrounding towns, small towns, that would like to help their employees secure a quality early education experience. They couldn't maybe purchase an entire scholarship, but with the tax incentive, they probably would. In fact, I've talked to members of the legislature who said they think this works. So that was the thought behind that. There is something that we would do outside of this legislation, and it's called the Parent Aware Promotion Board. That would be funded private fund to a lot of the people that are involved in the Early Learning Foundation. It would act as a large part of promotion of the standards. Everything that we're attempting to do, we want to make the market work, and we want to make it work better. Fortunately, we have a group of providers that, as you heard from Lisa, are willing to do this, and they get it quickly, and it's very helpful, and it's not a regulatory system. It's a reward system. We reward them with help. They get rewarded by a better reimbursement. So we found that that works. But we also know that for a market to work, you have to constantly promote it. You have to do the constant evaluation. That's our part of the deal, is we would continue that function outside of state government, much like a J.D. Powers or a Good Housekeeping seal. That was a long answer. I'm sorry.
Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Benson. I still disagree that MELF should be inserting itself in this when I think you could do good work staying a private foundation and making available to parents within a certain income group, parents who, as I alluded to earlier, may not have the skills and knowledge to help their children be more prepared to start school by operating outside the purview of the government, because this is absolutely more government, and this is imposing upon parents who want to be empowered some regulations that I think in the end are not going to pay off. And I've read the research too, and I know that you can find research that will support just about every point of view. But most of all, the parents, at least who live in central Minnesota, they want to be in charge of their children, and those who are low income would welcome a scholarship to help them, but they don't want all of this extra attached to it. And this bill is just a lot of extra. And so I want Minnesota Early Learning Foundation to continue as I originally thought it was to be, and love the fact you gave the $1 million back and said, we're going to do this on our own. And, you know, I know I'm on my soapbox, Mr. Chair, but I just have to express that on the behalf of my parents who are so concerned that we're just going to grow government. Thank you.
Representative Erickson, we know I never get on my soapbox.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Benson.
Let me respond by saying, first of all, we are going to sunset at the end of this year. We made that decision when we started. We did apply to research for the 6 years. And what we have found out is what we're recommending, Representative Loon's bill. That's what we're recommending. Clearly, you have a choice. And there are people that have testified today that don't like this proposal. And if they don't like that proposal, we have the current system. And I think there's universal agreement, and we certainly would concur, that it doesn't work very well. We think what we're proposing works much better, especially for those parents, especially if you can make the market work, and you can make the market work by giving them better information. And that's parent aware. And that's what hinges with the private investment, the parent aware. That's what hinges with the scholarships, the parent aware, the good information, which always makes markets work better. And I will close by saying that this is not a growth of government. It is going the other way because we empower the parents, and there are 34 funding streams in 4 agencies right now. And our vision would be to gradually collapse those down and put the power in the hands of the parents and give them good information.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, this may be for you, maybe for Mr. Benson, we'll see, but my first question is, how has the MDE and higher ed early childhood research been involved in the rollout of this proposal, or how are they involved currently?
To any of the testifiers.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Reinhart. We have the University of Minnesota SEED doing our evaluation, along with SRI, Stanford Research Institute. And so, by the way, they're very expensive, but they're also very good. And so they do a constant tracking of the cohorts of children, one of which I spoke to earlier about transient populations. And so we budgeted for these to be transient populations. And to Representative Erickson's point, not only did we find out that the transient notion did not occur, we had a growth of one student on 400. So they do stay lodged, which, by the way, creates problems if you're in the budget for raising money because you have to raise more. So we know that part of it works, but the evaluation is usually done by those two, and ChildWorks does some as well, I believe. Want to add anything?
Yeah, Erica Moss, Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, Mr. Chair. Representative Briner, we at MELF have a research consortium that we've worked with along through this process from the very beginning when we designed our pilot projects and set up the evaluations. And we continue to work with them, and many of the evaluations are ongoing and have agreements in place with parents of the kids in our pilots to continue to follow those kids as they enter kindergarten and go through the K-12 system. As Dwayne mentioned, the research consortium is SEED, which is the University of Minnesota's Center for Early Education and Development. Stanford SRI, Child Friends does the evaluation of Parent Aware, and Wilder Research has also contributed along the way. And we frequently publish research reports. We've got a mountain of it, and you can see it on our website.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks to all of you for that. Now, I'll tell you what I'm concerned about. It's very clear to me that there's a time sensitivity to the MELF proposal in terms of the whole QRS rollout and MELF sunsetting and so forth. And I know that Mr. Benson likes to advance this diagram as an argument in favor of the motion. But I would say, first of all these pieces of the puzzle have a right to be addressed in their own terms, in terms of who their targeted audiences are and how they are or aren't serving them, and then how that the rollout of your proposal will intermingle with those. Whether this is good or bad, I don't think is necessarily a given. You know, you have to. So that's a little subset of my text. But my real question has to do with the transitions when we're looking at. This program is being rolled out primarily through a structure that is child care focused, that is now moving toward an early learning focus. That's your goal. So then when you're transitioning into the education system, which has an overlap to child care early learning, then the conversation with MDE in terms of their whole assessment profile of goals, evaluation strategies, seems to me to require some conversation as opposed to simply saying that MDE will align school readiness with Parent Aware. Well, that's a conversation that assessment experts in these areas need to have. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I see a transition element that I don't hear you accounting for when you talk about the rollout of this. So I don't know who can speak to that.
Any other testimony from the representative?
Go ahead.
Well, that's a great question. And you can even take your question a step further from child care to school readiness. As importantly, if not more importantly, it's a work support system originally put in place so that two parents could work and meet their bills. We think that element is still essential, but while these children are in the system that does the work support, we think they should be driven to be school aware. And as we transition, we think that the pilots that we have, one in your area, will be instructive as to how we transition. And that's why we purposely did two in the inner cities, one in the suburb, and one in Mankato, North Mankato.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not saying this question can be answered in this hearing at this time. It's sort of I'm wanting to inquire and point to an area of concern. Obviously, DHS is rolling this out, and where does their expertise lie here in terms of, the whole assessment arena? And I know you provided your research base there, but nevertheless, there is an existing body of research, including early childhood research, that you're overlapping with. So I'm asking for that. I guess I want an openness to where that conversation and how it should occur. That's it.
To the testifiers.
Mr. Chair and Representative Breyer, I think our communications guy, Joe, is in the room, and he always says, judging what level of detail to provide in a handout is tricky. And I think that's maybe what is giving you concern. That's an oversimplification of, a 26-page bill. The bill doesn't really rest any of the things ongoing other than what Dwayne mentioned in terms of the Parent Aware Promotion Board and evaluation oversight with MELF and in the private sector. The other portions of the quality reporting system would be at DHS and would certainly involve their input. I know that the Department of Human Services is working with the Department of Education and will release next week an assignment that they have from the legislature to look at what a rating system might look like. So certainly all of these things are up in the air and ongoing, and we're open to what happens and try to be part of the process.
Representative Briner. Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond briefly to Representative Briner because I think she and I should talk offline, but I think we're thinking along the same lines. And just as I mentioned that the bill is continuing to undergo revision in that, I mean, clearly we have a number of programs in that are involved in providing care for children, some geared more towards early education and preschool and some more on child care because parents are working and they need a safe place for their children to be during the day. And this bill tries to, as originally drafted, provide some continuity across those programs towards the direction of early learning and preparation for kindergarten. And the direction I'm going to be going is probably narrowing that focus and trying to bring it more under the umbrella of the Department of Education and to try to address some of those concerns. I think the goal is very laudable, but sometimes in looking at some of these big concepts, again, personally, I think sometimes it's easier to take it in smaller steps. And that's kind of what I'm looking to do right now.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Loon, for bringing this forward, because I think it does some very unique things and things that we really need to address. One of them, I was speaking to some teachers yesterday who talked about maintenance of effort. And they said, you know, it's interesting, when we get funding, it usually is additional funding as long as we don't not fund something else. And a lot of times what that creates is duplicative programs and things that we just continue to perpetuate that really don't put the money where it needs to be. And so I do like the concept here of this is a complete review of early childhood learning, and I appreciate all the work that MELF has done here. We have to be careful, and I think that, you know, your approach is careful in this manner, that this isn't just an additional program, that we look at this as if we're going to replace some things, let's call it a replacement and not just an add-on. The other thing I like about it is it really does empower, because our parents are looking for those choices, and I know that the QRS system is a matter of concern for people that I respect very much, so I appreciate your, you know, openness to continue that dialogue of what the QRS looks like. I understand the reasoning behind it, but I also understand what Representative Erickson is saying, that this is a concern in her district and probably would be in mine as well when it comes to the QRS system. But I think we can work through that. And I guess most importantly, it really does address some of our concerns about early childhood learning. And it is beginning this dialogue that we really need to have. And I think it depoliticizes a lot of it, and I think that's also powerful. So I do appreciate you doing that. And my question is, you think I'm right, right?
Representative Loon, you don't have to answer that question.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, a couple of questions. First one is for you. I'm trying to understand the parliamentary status of this bill. Who has possession? What's the path? And I'll ask you or Representative Loon.
Sure. Representative Dabney, the committee is in possession of this bill. However, when we posted this committee, we posted this bill on the committee notices, we posted this as an informational hearing only. So the bill is not before us today. Representative Loon, as a courtesy, has shared with members the delete all amendments so members can see that, have time to digest it. Representative Loon, did you want to add anything onto that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Dabney, that you're sort of getting a preview of, again, a work in progress author's amendment. So when we actually have the bill before us for discussion and amendment, you can kind of see the direction in which I'm going.
That would make this the longest trailer for coming attractions that I've been exposed to. Can you clarify for me, either Ms. Chair or Ms. Representative Loon, has this bill gone to taxes? Will it go to taxes? It's getting fairly late in the process, and there are some significant tax implications in both Representative Loon and the Chair, as well as I sit on the Tax Committee.
Representative Dabney, I have not spoken to Chairman Davids yet, but my expectation would be that he would insist that
this provision as written would go to the tax committee.
Yeah. Okay, Mr.
But I don't want to speak for the chairman, but you and I both serve in the tax committee. We know there's a long, rich history in this institution of tax chairs defending their territory, and I can't imagine.
Rather vigorously.
Yes, absolutely. On a bipartisan basis. So I can't imagine that this bill, in its current format, would be able to progress without going to the tax committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And out of respect to the concept of germaneness, then I will limit my future comments or questions to other issues than the tax provisions that are in the bill. I guess my concern and quandary is the funding issue. Right now, the Minneapolis Public Schools engages in quite a bit of early childhood and kindergarten readiness programming. The problem is the state doesn't pay for an awful lot of that. And with 68% of the students in the district qualifying for free and reduced lunches, what we end up doing is taking from low-income Peter to fund his low-income little brother Paul. And it's at best a zero-sum game when we do that. The district is able to demonstrate some rather remarkable outcomes with some populations that historically have really struggled in preparation for schooling and in schools. So we can show we're doing good things, but we're taking blood out of a turnip. And so I do get concerned about when we then start talking about taking funding away, whether it's the current proposal or other possible proposals that would take the funding out of one pocket and put it someplace else, we don't actually increase opportunity. We actually decrease opportunity and damage opportunity. So I guess when it comes to the funding issue, good luck. because it's not an easy one. I think there's some value here. I've been telling advocates that I actually carried the first QRS bill. I believe that's true. They're lobbyists. They don't disagree with me, even if it's not true. but I actually do think it's true, and then it was one of the stripes I earned with a plenty veto early on. He later warmed to it. But I'm intrigued. I've got some significant apprehensions, however, and I look forward to an actual hearing where the committee can dig in deeper and maybe have fun with amendments and things like that.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank
any
you.
Other questions or comments? Representative Loon, any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I just briefly want to thank the committee for their interest in that, and you're correct, Representative Dabney, it is probably one of the longest trailers ever, but I'm hoping that through the discussion today, everyone is sort of becoming educated and aware of the concepts involved here, and again, I think some of the amendments in that will come forward will be clearly to try to identify a funding source for doing the scholarships and the QRS and where it would be located in that. And again, I'd like to thank all of the testifiers, including those that raised concerns about this. And again, just let me state, you know, very clearly my intent. You know, as a parent of two children of my own, and when they were of early childhood age, having information about what is available and for what you decide to choose as a parent to give to your child, whether it's education or other opportunities, I think is very important. And that is one of the things that really is a major concern and a reason for me stepping forward to author this proposal. Parents are hungry for information, especially with something as precious as your children. You want to know that you have all the information that's out there about, again, things that you're considering to hopefully be of benefit to them. So I think that very important component. Secondly, again, as a public official and during a time of great budgetary strife, I think it's important that we know what our public dollars are doing. And so, and that applies to everything, whether it's early childhood or other things. And I think we do need to have some system of a mechanism of measuring quality and what we're getting for the dollars that we're investing. I think that's just a smart thing to do in public policy and with public money. So it's trying to marry those two things, but with the overriding umbrella of maintaining parent choice. I am not interested in being in the business of trying to tell parents how to raise their children, whether or not they should go to preschool. Those things are for parents to decide and should be the ultimate arbiters of all of that. I'm simply saying if we're going to provide early education opportunities for parents and for parents who fairly feel their children need that, let's give them as much information as possible to make those decisions and help enable that to happen as they wish it to happen. So I want to thank very much the testifiers, and in particular, Mr. Benson and Ms. Moss, who have been incredibly helpful to me. So,
thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you, Representative Loon. Members, Representative Fritz had a scheduling conflict, so we're going to have Representative Greiling move House File 133 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Greiling, before we move forward to the bill, did you wish that I have Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow do a brief overview of the bill, or do you want to present it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can give a brief overview because it's about two sentences worth, but if there's any questions on the fiscal note, I will refer those to them. So, Mr. Chair and members, this is a bill that I'm sure Representative Fritz, if had she been able to be here, would have loved to present, because it is to allow students to have trial placements at the Minnesota Academies for the Deaf and the Blind. And this is for those of us who've been on the committee as long as I have, and for anyone who is on the committee for any length of time, just a favorite school, well run, and students do well there. But this would allow more students to do well there and find out if it's a good fit. So that's all I'm going to say, Mr. Chair. And I've got two people here. Okay, well, I will go with Dr. Linda Mitchell, who has driven up from Faribault, so that's why it is important to have the hearing, even though Representative Fritz can't be here at this moment.
Hi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, thank you. My name is Linda Mitchell. I am the superintendent of the State Academies, as Representative Greiling has stated here, in Faribault, and I have with me today Billy Ward, who is the special ed director for us at the State Academies. I have to just comment, after having been in the audience here, that I'm hopeful that this is a little bit easier and not quite as complicated as your previous discussion. And for those of you who don't know much about us, we serve students from birth to 21 years of age, and so I do have to just throw in this little caveat that we have seen a huge expansion in our early childhood program at the Blind School. And as we talk about how important that birth to 5-year-old period of time is, for our students it is exceptionally important, because it is the time for them to acquire language. And early access to language is critical to success in schools and in education. And so the sooner our students can access information, be it sign language, be it because they're visual learners, that is especially critical. Having said that, at the present time, students enter the academies through the IEP process. We are special education facilities, and come to us through the IEP meetings that occur at the school district of residence where the child resides. The bill that we are hoping will pass has to do with adding another process for, we're not talking about changing admissions or access to the academies. This would be another option. And at the present time, the public school districts in Minnesota, we are a resource to all of them. And so students come to us through their local school district of residence. Right now, if a school district does not believe that the academies is an appropriate placement, the recourse that parents have is to go through the due process, conciliation, legal process of special ed. We would like to offer this, and I do want to mention that we have worked very closely with MASE, the special ed directors in the state of Minnesota. We started this a couple of years ago. We believe that this is a respectful option, respectful to families, to the districts, and to the academy staff, in terms of finding a way to see if the academies is an appropriate option without having parents have to argue with school districts, and with school districts also not being responsible for the legalities of a placement that they may not agree with. When a child comes to us for a child placement, we would then assume that legal responsibility. Now, having said all of that, we also want to acknowledge the MASE Association, and we have Darren Kermis here, who is one of the members of that association, who helped us greatly last year in crafting the language so that we were getting the details right before we brought this to you. The thing that, and I'm not going to be the expert on this, but the fiscal change becomes a change in the reimbursement rate that we receive at the academies if more students come to us. So that's the fiscal part of this bill. Overall, we try to be as cost neutral as possible because we want to be an option for school districts to use that isn't going to break the bank. Right now, the basic aid revenue is what is considered the tuition to attend the academies. Even though school districts still get to count those students for categorical aid if there's a levy, et cetera. So that really explains the fiscal part of this. But again, as I say, we would like to think of this as an opportunity to parents and school districts for a trial placement to occur. This is 60 to 90 calendar days, and at which time another IEP meeting would be held, and if we were in agreement, obviously, the placement would continue. If we were not, the child's placement would revert back to the previous one before the trial placement.
Thank you. And welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Billy Ward, and I'm the Special Education Director at the academies.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Let's see. I'm not sure if there's anything else. The one question that has come up with some of the school districts is in regards to transportation. And currently, school districts are responsible for transportation. That would not change with this addition to the bill. We would, you know, the transportation obligation with the districts would stay as it is right now, and that is one concern that's been brought up. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a public hearing. Members of the public are invited to testify either for or voice concerns about the bill. Are there any members of the public who wish to do so? Seeing none, that will conclude the public testimony of this bill. Are there any questions or comments from members of the committee? Any closing comments from our testifiers?
The one last thing that I would just like to say, always, if you are in the area, we're not that far away down in Faribault off of 35. We would love to have you come and visit and actually see what we do. So you are welcome. If you have questions, feel free to give us a call or stop and see us. And thank you.
Thank you. With that, Representative Greiling renews her motion to have House File 133 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, are there any questions, comments, or announcements? Seeing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.